Hello, this is John Pernay from Ion Annapolis and the Maryland Crabs Podcast with a special election crab cake episode for your listening pleasure. In June, we held a mayoral forum that was very, very well attended. And you can, and quite honestly, you should, go listen to that one. And you can find it on themarylandcrabs.com. But today, we bring you the voices of all of the other candidates running for alderperson. Well, all but one of them. Republican candidate for Ward 1, Larry Clausen, did not respond to any of our requests. While we would have liked to have presented a forum or a debate with these 17 individuals, it just wasn't practical. So, we took it to the road so you can learn a little bit more about each of them in order to help us all make an informed vote. All of the questions were essentially the same to keep it fair, and we are releasing them all at the same time. Tune in and listen as your candidates answer some crucial questions about the city of Annapolis and how they plan to handle it should they be successful. Thanks for listening, enjoy, and be sure to vote.
We are here probably at the most beautiful place that I've had a chance to do these alderman interviews. We're here outside of Carroll's Creek Cafe overlooking Annapolis Harbor, and we are here with Ward 8 aldermanic candidate, Julie Musog. How are you today?
Very good.
You can get right into it. I mean, I know you're a longtime Eastport resident. Mm-hmm. You were heavily involved with the Stop Gunfire Now way back when under former Mayor Moyer. What specifically, as you've gotten into this race, are you finding are the concerns for your constituents in Ward 8?
Sure. Crime still continues to be a big concern when I've been out door knocking. It's really in the top of the list, especially over in the Warren Drive Janus area. There's been a lot of home break-ins there, and I'm not sure there's as much of an awareness about that as other people, you know, maybe closer in over here have. But we still see the car break-ins on a regular basis. The parking lot sometimes has heroin overdoses. Mm-hmm. You probably know you've seen that in the newspaper. So that's high on people's lists. The roads really need a lot of attention.
Okay.
It's very high on a lot of people's lists, as well as some major infrastructure projects along the creeks, the dredging. People are having a lot of trouble on the Back Creek side with stormwater runoff, and it's been dredged in years past and needs another round of dredging to kind of keep it up to date. And I think that people are just generally frustrated that stuff isn't getting done.
As aldermen, not alderman, alderwoman, I'll be politically correct.
You know, I think alderman's actually fine.
Alderperson. But as you're not only a representative of Ward 8, you're also a representative of the city. Do you find the same issues, like you say, the crime, the infrastructure, and just not getting stuff done, translate into it? Is that what the city vibe is that you're feeling that they're concerned with as well?
I think so. You know, I think people are frustrated that it takes so long to move things forward. People that have tried to open a business are frustrated by the permitting, you know, planning and zoning concerns. And that's citywide. That's not just downtown or Eastport.
But, right.
You know, you're talking to Forest is an area outside over off of Hudson Street. There's some businesses that have had mm-hmm. some trouble with that. I probably hear about it more than the average person just because of my day job at economic development when there's some level of frustration.
Sure.
It's certainly, you know, my office can't assist with any permitting and planning issues in the city. That's all on the city, but it's certainly, you know, a lot of these people have businesses in the county as well, or they're expanding. And what is really troubling is when I hear on not the rare occasion that XYZ will never do business in the city again. It was too frustrating. They had the worst experience. And we don't want to be that. We want to be able to help businesses and help them grow and stay in the city. Unfortunately, the city does not have the most welcoming reputation for business.
Where do you stand? I mean, you are with the Anne Arundel Economic Development mm-hmm. Corp. Chairman of that? Is that the CEO?
President and CEO. Yep.
Executive director, whatever. Where do you stand on development? We've got some big developments. We've got mm-hmm. Crystal Springs, which is now called Providence Point. You've got the Eastport Landing, mm-hmm. which is there. There's some little ones up in Ward 7. Where do you stand generally in terms of development in the city of Annapolis?
Well, I think the city is pretty developed. I mean, what we're talking about in a lot of areas is redevelopment and a refresh of some of the older buildings and stock. You're seeing some of that in West Annapolis right now. That one office building behind the Growls has been completely taken down and being rebuilt, which is actually being done by the same group that is trying to do the Eastport Landing project. Now, that's going to be Class A office space in West Annapolis. That's a nice thing. It's a replacement, but it is development. And so I think when it comes to development, it's very important to follow the code and to be clear about what that is and to apply it consistently. And that, I think, is the frustration that people have had with the city, is that it's not always very responsive, but it's not very clear, and it's not always consistent. And we've seen that a lot over the years. So I think you primarily just want to make sure that the code is being followed. And if you don't like the way what the answer the code gives you, then you need to change the code. You don't need to go outside the process. We need to stick to the process and change the code, because it certainly seems like there's, especially with the density calculation for Eastport Landing, that some clarity to the code would be a good idea. The county's gone through this where we're rewriting every article of the county code, you know, kind of giving it a thorough top to bottom. Because what happens is you sort of piecemeal over time, and maybe some things don't fit right or it doesn't make sense. And the county, or the, I'm sorry, the city's zoning code has been like that. And it's been a lot of sort of like little, you do one exception for one thing here and there, and we probably need to just tear it apart and look at it on a comprehensive basis. There's more than 30 different zonings in the city. That's more than the county has.
And it's what, 5.5 square miles or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. So with more like, I think, 32 separate zonings.
Wow.
7 of them maritime alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's time to just sort of take an overall look at the city and what makes sense from a planning standpoint, because piecemealing it out isn't going to give us the best result.
I'm not seeing a Republican or a Democratic sweep of the council and mayor. As a Republican running for city council, you're likely going to have to be working with the Democrats that are on mm-hmm. city council, or perhaps a Democratic mayor. How do you personally reach across those lines across the aisle to figure it out and
sure.
work it all together?
Most of these issues aren't party related in my mind. I mean, Boucher Avenue is in terrible shape. I don't think Republicans or Democrats disagree that it needs to be repaved.
Okay.
Same with the fires and funding and making sure your priorities are, I think those aren't necessarily partisan issues. We have, I think, in the city made things partisan when they shouldn't be. But I certainly work with all the county council members, Republican and Democrat, on legislation. And it's really just about good governance. And I think that speaks across party lines.
Follow the city council. You followed the mayors for several years and several administrations. Mm-hmm. Let's just look at the current council and the current mayor. What one or two things do you look at and go, oh my God, why the hell did they do that? What was the big mistake? And if you can't come up with anything, then you're admitting they're perfect.
No. Only two? I'm just kidding. I think that it's hard for me to understand the debate that was going on with the golf course sale, knowing what the value of that was, because I had looked at the numbers, and that really spiraled out of control for a while there and almost, you know, completely eliminated a deal that was very favorable for the city to $3.1 million for a sort of a neglected asset to put towards other infrastructure in the city. Now, I understand that they wanted to spend it on rec, but $3.1 million for a pool seems a little excessive, and so that bothered me when you're looking around and you're seeing, you know, the pensions aren't fully funded, retiree health care is not being funded at all, and there's no plan right now to do so. Stormwater, they're just about to, you know, they've just started talking about what the plan is, even though they've been collecting the fee for a very long time. Delaying the decision on the Market House. I mean, I get not everybody's happy that this wasn't perfect, but once again, there was the process and it was being followed, and to, you know, do a delay like that for businesses is very difficult for them to have. I mean, who knows that they want to do it in a month? Like, maybe they're, you know, they don't have to accept this terms. I mean, they had certain terms that they submitted an RFP under, which was having a decision by the end of July. So it doesn't put us in a great position when we do things like that.
You can argue back and forth whether the city's on sound financial footing or bad financial mm-hmm. footing. And with your financial background, you probably can attest to this a little bit better for me. But let's just assume for a minute that the city is in dire straits.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the verge of bankruptcy. What do you do as an alderwoman to help right that ship if we get to the point where it's dire? I mean, Hillman's collapsed, and I mean, it's just beyond borrowing a couple thousand bucks to make payroll. We're really in dire straits. Where do you start?
We make the cuts.
What's...
Yeah, and that's a big debate. Certainly one I was a part of years ago when, it all sort of started when we worked on the crime issue, and then there was all these promises made, and our group was like, well, somebody should watch the budget and make sure that they actually put these funding sources into the budget. They looked at me, and I said, okay. So I went to every budget hearing and budget work session. And after
exciting
sitting
through, afternoon.
Yes. And especially when you're paying for a babysitter to do that too. But what I came away with, and I think I said this to Bill Kardish because he came to one, and I said, oh my God, you thought the crime was the biggest problem in the city? The budget process is the biggest problem. They don't know what they're doing. I mean, department heads didn't know what their budget was, didn't really care, didn't have any accountability to sticking to those budgets. And it was just surreal because I've never seen something like that. I mean, if you're a department head, you should know exactly what your budget is and why you need that money. And you should be accountable for staying within your budget. But that wasn't the discipline that they were working under. And came home to roost after assessments dropped and there weren't any other choices other you cut or you raise property taxes. So at that point, they weren't making a lot of movement forward. And that was when Doug Smith actually came in as...
as a city manager, yep. City administrator.
Yep. And so Doug and I sat down and went through sort of what needs to happen with 80% of... the city expenses being payroll, something would have to happen in that area to really significantly change the direction of things. But that was not a direction anybody was really willing to take, not even through like attrition and things like that. But that to me is the only, that's long-term the only way that you're going to have some cost savings. Now, we talked about doing trash back then. It took years. And look, it's 40% cheaper now that we've outsourced trash. Mm-hmm. There's other things to like look at like that. And I don't think that you're at a point where you have to do layoffs for jobs, but there needs to maybe be some functional realignment of people's okay. And positions. But like I said, there wasn't a real desire to do any of that. And instead, the alternative was borrowing $10 million to keep payroll going, slow paying vendors, and raising property taxes. The rate increased under Josh Cohen by 24%, and that was significant. And it wasn't that he was bringing in more money. So those last 4 years when Ellen Moyer was the mayor, she kept the property tax rate the same, but assessments increased so significantly the budget was much larger. Sure. It went from like 44 in the general fund to 60 million in 4 years. That's a huge jump. Yeah. For a little town. And then, Josh got stuck with the aftermath of that and trying to juggle something when you've got cratering assessments. So we really, and I don't think that the city's ever really had a very honest talk about what kind of rainy day fund should they have. I mean, we have that debate quite often in the county about what's the appropriate level, because it's a lot harder in the county. You can't raise property tax rates
to what the cap.
Yeah, so it's a revenue cap, which is even more binding on you. So
true.
When assessments decrease like that, you can raise it to the cap, but other sources of income were drying up, like recordation and transfer tax, hotel taxes. I mean, everything was cratering in, and you couldn't make it up in property tax. Whereas the city can crank that knob way up
if they need to.
But we shouldn't do that, right? We should figure out a way to level things out and make sure that we have addressed sort of our long-term liabilities and keep things on an even keel. So I think that we've sort of leveled out a little bit on some of this. It helps the economy's improving. I think they've seen a real jump in income taxes in the city as well in the last year or two, which has been helpful. But you still don't fully fund the pension and OPEB. Sure. And stormwater. We've got, $5 million, I think, in capital projects that need to be funded and make sure that's funded by the current fee rather than quadrupling it, which was suggested. I think that we could live within our means on that.
How many hours do you figure this volunteer position of alderman, because let's face it, you're not doing it for the 14 grand.
Is it that much?
And, yeah. It is essentially a volunteer position. Yeah. And it's a stipend that you're receiving. But I mean, how much time do you figure this is going to take?
To do it and do it well and, you know, make sure that, I mean, I'm very timely about wanting to get back to people within 24 hours when they email, even if it's just to say I'm looking into the answer. I think the worst thing you can do with a constituent is not contact them at all. So, you know, it depends on the volume of email and issues, but you've got two meetings a month. Fortunately, they don't coincide with the county council meetings that I might have to go to. My Monday nights are going to be super exciting for a while. You know, work sessions, so depending on committee work, but I would hope, you know, 10 to 20 hours a week at most to kind of be able to balance it out. But I know a lot of the issues. I think that helps, that having lived here and worked on some of these things.
How do you plan to keep in touch with your constituents in Ward 8?
Yeah, so...
I mean, some people do, I know Ross Arnett does town hall meetings. That's his thing that he likes. Yeah. And others do newsletters.
Yeah, I think... a combination of both is appropriate. Not everybody wants to get email. It doesn't reach everyone, but I think between town halls, newsletters, I mean, I could see doing a mailing quarterly, sort of an update of what's going on and new developments.
I enjoy the city's quarterly water update.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, okay, it's the most geeky looking thing you get, but I look forward to that. And I mean, I know the history of where it came when that person died in the plant, but it was... where they had to do it, but I mean, it's always nice to see the quality of water that we do have.
We do have very nice water in Annapolis. That's very lucky, which is very important. And it's one of the sides of government that not everybody is thinks they don't think about it, because most of what goes on in the city government, it should be that you don't even notice it. Like, you shouldn't even, if you're this involved in something, it means we're probably doing something wrong.
Let's get a little bit philosophical here. We've always heard about two Annapolises, and we've got the, take it to the extremes. We've got the rich white folks that live down in the waterfront mansions, and you've got lower income, and a storm coming in, lower income, public housing, on the opposite end, and there is this big gap in between. Mm-hmm. What do you do to close that gap? Certainly you're not going to do it on your own. Certainly not going to do it within a year. Or 4 years or 8 years, but where do you start to move that needle a little bit to close that?
Well, I think you just have to talk about it first and make sure that there is an awareness. I think there's a good portion of the city that just doesn't want to even really think about it too much. But I think what's been most impressive with Mike's administration so far is the work that he's done with HACA and getting some really qualified people on that board to deal with the situation that they've got, which is that federal funding is drying up for the model that they have. They should have been shifting to these public-private partnerships that they did at the two other off of Clay Street and right. Admiral Heights to really help with the redo and the funding. And that actually puts those properties back on the tax rolls. But when they redo the property, if it's through a private partnership like Penrose, I think, did
right.
one of them, the land is still owned by HACA and it is still tax exempt. But the buildings themselves are owned by Penrose and they go on the property tax rolls.
But the improvements of the property are.
Yeah, so that's good for the city. And you've got a for-profit company that is improving the housing stock. I mean, the stuff over off of Admiral, it looks great. It looks so much better. And people deserve to have a nice, decent-looking home. I mean, Eastport Terrace and Harbor House are really... bad shape. They've got to move forward on that. And so I think there's some help by raising awareness and moving projects. Those projects should not stall. If we can move those along at a city level to redo some of that housing, that's a big step forward. But continue, obviously stressing education, after school programs, Boys and Girls Club, Seed for Success, Boxer Rain. These are all great organizations that do a lot of work in the community to make sure. You know, when we worked with some of the girls at Seeds for Success, a lot of them had never, they don't feel comfortable in certain places, and right. Annapolis is their home as well. They shouldn't feel uncomfortable walking over the Eastport Bridge into downtown Annapolis.
That's sad.
It is, because their world is very small then, if that is all. And then I think the redistricting of the schools will hopefully do some good as well.
All right, well, what I can't vote for you, I'm not in your ward, but let's, why is Julie Mastagrani, what are your qualifications, what makes you the candidate of choice for Ward 8 Alderman when it comes November? You don't have a primary.
No, that's I think that's good for me. I mean, I'm happy that I do not have a primary, but I wish, you know, Bumper and Ross well. I know both of them, worked with Ross for years, known Bumper for years. We have kids the same age.
Right.
So Owen and Alex were in summer camp, and I think the world of him and Breton. And so I think that for myself, why am I running? I've been asked to do this in the past, and I've always declined, and I just have gotten to the point where I'm tired of seeing the same things over and over. This is where my son was born. We'll graduate from high school, come back. This is our home, our permanent home. When I first moved here, I wasn't sure how long we would be here. We used to move around a lot, but we are now not leaving. So I want to make this the best possible place it can be. And I think that the accumulation of experience that I've had, I think it could be a help to the city. So, you know, I brought my private sector background experience when I went to the county. When I first got out of college, I worked for Price Waterhouse in Detroit, and I did mostly, I was in the audit insurance space, but I did a lot of merger and acquisition work. It was called transaction support at the time. Great work, lots of work. You get to see behind the curtain at a lot of major companies, and it's a great experience and when you're young. And then I went and worked for a national home builder who's headquartered in Bloomfield Hills there. That's Pulte Homes. I did all their SEC reporting and M&A work. And M&A work dried up because the multiples were so high. So I was then Delphi spun off from General Motors, and General Motors literally cloned their mainframe and said good luck, and left them with the engineering plans. But they didn't have a finance staff or a background. So they created this group called the Financial Performance Group. And I came in with that group, and we worked directly for the CFO and CAO and created basically the reporting structure for the entity. And we worked on the earnings calls and what were sort of the analytics behind things. And also, I guess just previous to that, I had started going back to school part-time for my MBA. And I eventually went back to school full-time to finish that and graduated in a very unfortunate year for MBA graduates. It was 2002, so the fall of 9/11, which is when you're usually doing your interviews and flying around the country. There were no flights. It was a tough job market, but I was very fortunate. I took a job with Dell in Austin, Texas, and worked in their corporate finance group, where I worked on the worldwide plan, which was building a three-year plan to take Dell from a $30 billion to $60 billion company. And we were able to do that in less than 3 years. And Dell's a fantastic place to work. I mean, everything moved at the speed of light, which was a little different than your GM legacy company, Delphi.
Right.
And then I moved into a small, medium business segment. So I enjoyed the work there quite a bit. Worked with Special Pricing Group, which always cracks people up. And I said, we worked, so I was in charge of working with sales guys and working on negative margin deals and, you know, approving them. Negative margin deals, I said, yes, it was a market share play at the time for Dell, and the component costs decreased enough that they were usually revenue positive at the end of the contract. But it was very hard when I came here and interviewed for a job. They're like, we don't do that. And I said, no, I get your business model's a little different than what they were doing. I ended up here because of my husband. He owned a business in New Hampshire, and the commute to Austin, Texas was too hard, and I wouldn't move to New Hampshire. So this was the happy compromise. Yeah. He was close to BWI. And I took a job then with NVR, the home builder, mm-hmm. when they formed, it was called Baltimore South, and it was Anne Arundel and all of the Eastern Shore. So I was the finance person, like the CFO of that little region here. Started doing that and had my son, but then my husband started a business based out of Dallas, Texas. And he was commuting 6 days a week at that point. So after 8 months of trying to do that, we made the decision that I would quit. We would move to Dallas for a few months while he tried to wrap up the business and move it to Annapolis, because we wanted to be here. Now, you don't see many people move a business from Texas to Maryland, but he did. And we were back. But then I was home with my son at that point for a few years, which gave me the opportunity to get involved in a lot of local groups. And that was sort of the beginning of MRE Moms and Dads, because Jess had just had her first. And, right. you know, there, all of the, you know, it was all boys for some reason. We're all born in like the 05, 06 time frame. But it was a great way to get to know people in the area. Started working with a number of like Junior League and the Eastport Civic Association. I was the treasurer there for 2 years. I was the past president of Junior League. I was the PTA president of my son's school for 2 years. I mean, there wasn't a volunteer opportunity that I wasn't sucked into at one point. But then, you know, crime was really, was getting, I mean, we could hear gunfire on a nightly basis. And, you know, they're like, call the non-emergency number. And you kind of get this bored answer. I would go to the crime meeting and get sort of a, well, get a dog. I'm like, I have two. And have an alarm system. I've got one of those too. And the murder rate was, I mean, it was one or two a month there. I think we had 11 in 07. I think it was 07. So it was pretty shocking. And there were a couple of incidences that happened. And an email went out to our Moms and Dads group from one of the moms that said, hey, is anybody else concerned about crime? I wrote back, yeah. So I'm driving home with my 2-year-old asleep in the backseat of the car down President Street at 2 in the afternoon. And there's a medevac helicopter in the middle of the street. There's a SWAT team with actual, you know, the full-on guns in the rear. And so I get home. I call the police department because my husband was out of town and said, I'm home alone with my son. Should I leave the house and go somewhere else? And I got a pause. I wouldn't go outside right now, but it should be okay in a little bit. So there was a no-knock warrant served at those apartments on Madison there. Okay. The man pulled out a gun and shot the police officer, and they killed him. And that was why there was such a but this is in the middle of the afternoon. The week before, the BB&T that I usually walk to with my dog and baby stroller, and you go in, was robbed in the middle of the afternoon. Armed robbery in the middle of the afternoon. I called my husband about something because there was some robbery somewhere. He's driving down West Street. He said, honey, I can't talk right now because I'm stuck. They've shut down the road because the gas station was robbed. There's a lot going on. And so I wrote back to this woman, and she says to me, well, you're the only person that wrote me. I said, you're kidding. My neighbors and I are all really upset about this. She said, well, let's meet. Let's talk about what we can do. So my neighbors, I mean, God bless, like they were all in force. And we met at Ah Coffee. So many people were there who couldn't fit into the Ah Coffee. They were spilling out the outside. And this is where we were like, well, we're going to write a letter to our alderman. What else do you, or like, right, do you sure. do? And so, no answer. You know, crickets. So one of my neighbors who's since moved away said, all right, we need to be a little more public about this. We're going to go to a county or a city council meeting, and we're going to have some testimony. We're going to talk about this at the beginning of the meeting about, you know, incidences that we've had. So we're all like, okay. So we go. And that is when, in the paper the next day, the mayor referred to us as rhetorical bomb throwers, and that we were ridiculous. So, you know, that happened, and people read that article and started calling me and one of the other people that were mentioned in the article and said, I agree with you. And that was terribly rude of them to say that to you. And you're right, there is a crime problem, and my house was broken into the other day, and this happened, and that happened, and I was mugged. I mean, all of a sudden, all of these people from everywhere were complaining. And the next meeting I think we did, it was at the Eastport Methodist Church. The minister there said, you guys should meet here. You need more space, and I understand you're right, there is a crime problem, and people aren't listening. And you need to, you know. So that's when, I don't know if you remember this, but then one of the neighbors, she made signs, and we went to the, we're like, all right, we're going to the next council meeting, right?
We're just going to it's like a little naive, right?
Some of this, but we had this nice passionate group of people, and she made signs that said, we live in fear, and passed them out to everybody coming in. Like, do you want a sign? And people are like, heck yeah. The entire, every seat was filled. And they people stood up and held their signs the entire time that we did our testimony that time, which was a little more effective because then it was on the front page of the paper, and that is when Speaker Bush called us and said,
the Safe Streets program.
Yeah, and then come on into my office on a Sunday, let's talk. And said, you're right. Because at that point, that's when the prior police chief said he couldn't patrol in public housing because that was federal land, which is not true.
Right.
He also had a philosophy that every inch deserved the same amount of patrol time. So you live in West Annapolis, there's no crime, you're going to get the same amount of police time on your street. We're like, but dead bodies over here. So you think maybe you want to come to this area?
Right.
So that was when you were told that you would be getting a new police chief, Capital City Safe Streets, all of that stuff sort of rolled out at that point. So, you know, it was a positive. And that's when I said I got involved with the budget.
Okay.
So now I'm still like the volunteer maven at this point. But because of that, I realized that I worked on Dave Corll's campaign for mayor because I felt that he would be more responsive to the issues that we had with crime than Josh Cohen. So okay. I got to know some other people while doing that, a couple of those people being Herb McMillan, who then asked if I would be interested in being his chief staff legislative person at the House of Delegates, which I said, I don't know anything about that. I mean, that's not really a background that I have. I'm a finance person.
Right.
But, you know, for Herb, it was about he wanted somebody that understands the budget, understands the finances, and, you know, can kind of dig into some of that stuff. So it was great. I mean, it was, I would say it's a great learning experience to anybody to see sort of how that end works. And all of the other, like the Anne Arundel delegation's great, and all of the assistants were great. I mean, they showed me the ropes, told me what to do. I said it was valuable knowledge, I think, because now I know how that process, and I've had to work that process from the county side. So then when Dave became chief of staff under Laura Newman, he called me and said, are you ready to come back full-time and come to the county? And I did. I made the move then, and then was placed in the controller's office.
So you were the controller for the county for under Laura Newman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then Steve got me on.
Okay, and then you...
And then November, I moved over to economic development.
Okay. So. And they retained you after Laura Newman in Boston. Steve came in there.
Yep.
And currently now with economic development.
Yep. Being controller was a fantastic job. And I loved, you know, I had a great team of people that I worked with. But it really teaches you, you see every piece of the county when you are in that role. Finance touches every department. You work with, you know, the budget and the actuals and the spending, so it gives you a lot of visibility into how things should work. And so watching the city struggle with, you know, following procurement regulations gets kind of frustrating. And planning and zoning, you know, who interprets the code? Well, planning and zoning officer is the one that interprets the code, not the city attorney, not the county attorney, the planning and zoning officer. So we need, you know, that's the process. If you don't want that to be the process, then you need to change the process legally, not leapfrog around it, just follow it. But there's a, you know, there's a reason why we do things a certain way, and it's, you know, to be transparent and efficient. And I think that there's a level of frustration that people don't feel that the city is either of those. And I think Jimmy DeButt's article was
spot on.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, how do we get a hold of, how do we learn more about Julie Messog in the next, well, I would say 8 weeks, but then you don't have to worry about eight weeks.
No, I guess I have three whole months.
You just have to have one vote. You've got to remember to go out and vote for yourself.
That's right. So at least
as
have
long
that.
As you have one, you can go on.
So my website is julieforannapolis.com, and then I have a Facebook page as well, Julie for Annapolis, but you can get to either place from either one. But I would love it if people would like my Facebook page, sign up for emails. We send out weekly updates and event notices and things like that.
And all of those Julie for, that's the word for, correct?
Yes,
okay,
F-O-R.
So there's no number for there.
No, that's very fancy.
Okay. Julieforannapolis.com,
mm-hmm.
both on Facebook Facebook and on the web.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Julie Musso, candidate for Alderwoman in Ward 8, Eastport. And for those that are listening that don't know where Eastport is, it is the peninsula, where Eastport, like the Blackwall Hitch and the boatyard down that. It's that whole peninsula surrounded by Back Creek on one side, Spot Creek on the other side. And it ends kind of about Tyler Avenue on one side, and then it goes up a little bit.
Yeah, so Warren is the last street down off of Bay Ridge. But the other side of the street ends at Tyler.
Yeah.
So there's the little jog out. And then President Street really splits it down the middle. So on the left side of President, that's all Ward 8. And on the right side, it's all Ward 6.
It's Ward 6. Wonderful. Learn more about Julie Musslog at julieforannapolis.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Answers from a candidate or alderperson in the city of Annapolis. Did they answer anything that was on your mind? If not, make sure you get in touch with them so you can make the best vote come September 19th in the primary election. Be sure to keep up to speed on the election at ionanapolis.net and also on themarylandcrabs.com. It is an important election this year, so it is so important to get out and vote. And speaking of voting, the primary is on September 19th and the general election is on November 7th. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And after the primary, look for an announcement from us about a mayoral debate between the two survivors. Just like the forum in June, Ion Annapolis and the Maryland Crabs will bring this to you, but this time it will be structured more as a debate rather than a forum. Thank you for listening to this special election crab cake episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Maryland Crabs podcast. We have fresh stuff that drops every Thursday at noon.